You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Friday morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. So I woke up early and I've had a couple things going on in my head here the last 48 hours. One is watching all the events surrounding the 75th commemoration of the day that the Allies went ashore in Normandy. So if you grew up in the shadow of World War II, and it was a long shadow that World War II casted, if you grew up in the shadow of that, if those men were part of your life, I mean, It was not a small part of your life. It was not a small part of our culture. So watching that again, 75 years later, seeing the few that have survived, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And so, that's on my mind. And so, that's in my head, right? So then, when we do the Lynch and Kenny event this week, we're talking about Normandy. And one of the things that I talk about is, in that segment, is the cost. And you look at a guy like George Marshall, who was essentially the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Later, he would be Secretary of Defense and then Secretary of State for the nation. And he understands peace, right? So I wrote a little blurb this morning that I'll publish with the first hour here, I think. I might do it differently. But anyway, here's what I wrote. As I watched the D-Day ceremonies yesterday, a thought crept into my head. That was a huge price to pay for not confronting Hitler as he defied the conditions of the Treaty of Versailles. The free nations of the world that defeated Germany in 1918 did not have the will to see the conditions of the treaty through, nor the wisdom to renegotiate them so as to alleviate the economic hardship that spawned the National Socialist Movement inside of Germany. When Germany, under the leadership of Adolf Hitler, acted aggressively, the free nations of the world acted weakly. And this is kind of the stunning conclusion of that. As a result of that weakness, approximately 3% of the world's population would die during World War II. Estimates are between 70 to 85 million people perished in World War II. Think about that. This is a Wikipedia thing. So again, take it for what it's worth. World War II was the deadliest military conflict in history. An estimated total of 70 to 85 million people perished, which was about 3% of the 1940 world population. Civilian deaths totaled 50 to 55 million. And there is a table. There's a table here. Deaths as a percentage of the 1939 population. Let's see. China, 3% of the population. Czechoslovakia, 2.3 to 2.4% of the population. France, 1.5% of the population. Germany, 7.3 million people killed. Italy's data is incomplete. Soviet Union, 14.5 million people. Now, those are what? Combatants? Military wounded. Total deaths. China, 15 to 20 million people died in China, according to this. Italy. 500,000 people died in Italy. Japan, 2.5 to 3.1 million people died in Japan as a result of World War II. Poland, 6 million people died in Poland as a result of World War II. Romania, 500,000 people died in Romania. Soviet Union, 20 to 27 million people died in World War II. Yugoslavia, 1 million to 1.7 million. So, I mean, the numbers are, I mean, think about that. Now, you would think what is the lesson in all of that? What is the lesson in all of that? The lesson is that, and this is where Marshall comes in, okay? So, Marshall, he rebuilds the American army, or helps rebuild it, on three separate occasions. He rebuilds it or builds it in response to World War I because we do not have a large standing army. The war is ended. The Allies are victorious. The Allied Expeditionary Force, right, comes home. The American portion of it. And it is disbanded. We go back to essentially pre-war levels, blah, 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 blah. World War II is looming. United States Army, United States military expands. So that's the second time. after World War II, what do we do with the military? We gut it. And then we're back into Korea. So Marshall's, you know, conclusion, and I dare say the conclusion, except the stupidest amongst us, is that the only way to avoid large conflict is to have an army large enough and to have allies strong enough that anybody who would think about usurping a laws-based world order set in motion so that free nations could pursue their own destinies economically and be restrained militarily, right? A rules-based, a law-based order. That was the only way that could exist. Now, as you look around the world, it's like we're inviting disaster again. Why? And now the pictures that I use for this entry, this ultimately that will be a podcast, are essentially the three major dictators that brought us World War II. Hitler, Mussolini, and essentially Tojo. I had to read some Japanese history this morning. Like, who was actually in charge? You know, how much approval did the emperor give? And so, anyway, Tojo's essentially the prime minister of Japan as they go to war. So, and then I should probably put, you know, Stalin in there as well. But Stalin, you know, he was attacked, right? He's a dictator, but he's attacked by Germany, obviously. But the lessons for guys like Macron, you know, for Japan, for Germany, for the United Kingdom, is the universal lesson is this: if you won't defend it, if you won't confront them, all you do is you kick the can down the road. For instance, when Hitler is rearming his military, when he begins to rumble about the Sudetenland, what should have happened? The Allies should have sent a delegation and said, it ain't happening. Okay? These are the conditions of the treaty. And if you will not adhere to it, we will come back here. We will come back here. Now, a war-weary France, a war-weary United Kingdom, you know, an isolationist, increasingly isolationist United States, did they have the will to do that? Obviously not, right? We have Neville Chamberlain, you know, crying peace in our time. And then between 70 and 85 million people will die because of it. Will die because of that. Will die because of weakness in the face of totalitarianism. So yesterday, as I watched all the events and all these people saying the right things, you see France, who's militarily nothing, right? Who's militarily nothing. You see Germany that is less than nothing, and you see the UK that is barely something, and then you see China looming, right? Russia is faking it. Everybody knows that, okay? Except the media, they don't know that. But Russia's faking it. You have Iran as an emerging, you know, totalitarian state, and you have North Korea as an emerging totalitarian state. Not as emerging totalitarian states. They've long been totalitarian states, but they're emerging nuclear threats, right? So if you won't confront them, where does that leave the world? And it just, you know, the lesson of Normandy was that, and that this is how the thought kind of started germinating. That was an expensive price to pay. And then that price, I thought, well, hell, World War II was an expensive price to pay for what? For not standing up to totalitarianism? The world wringing its hands. Now, again, I, you know, having gone and fought for my country, you know, any loss of life is horrible. That's somebody's baby. That's somebody who doesn't get to live their dream to come home and be a farmer, to be a, you know, to be a fireman, to be a insurance salesman, to be a teacher, whatever the hell, to be a coach, to be an artist. That's somebody's only life. And it's awful. But consider this. Had the Allies said, no, we have to confront Germany militarily in 19, pick a day, pick a year, 35, 36, whenever. If they would assembled an army and said, we'll go to Europe, we'll go to Germany now, and we will enforce the armistice, and we will bend them to our will. And again, if it means renegotiating the Treaty of Versailles, then renegotiate the Treaty of Versailles. Alleviate the burden on Germany that was placed on it that keeps it in this state of radical percolation. Now, there you go. There's a term for it. Allow it to progress, extend the you know, France, right? All the money that was supposed to be repatriated, you know, to different countries for damages that they endured because of the war. Renegotiate that. Think about that. And even if there had been a shooting war there, inside of Germany, as the Allies went and said, no, this is the way it's going to be. This is the way it has to be. There would have been thousands killed or wounded, not millions. Think about that. And so, to me, that's been in my head. Today we have different adversaries. I mean, I just watched some video of the Russians, their crazy ass, trying to run into one of our ships in the South China Sea. And it's all over the place because it's great video, right? Great video. So, and that's what we live for. So anyway, if you won't defend the rules-based world that we live in, if the free nations won't stand together and defend it, then all you're doing is kicking the can down the road to a worse outcome at some other point in time. And like I said this yesterday, how the United Kingdom thinks that contracting with Huawei for their 5G infrastructure is a good deal is completely beyond me. It's completely, completely beyond me. So anyway, good Friday morning to you. The chef's going to join us here. And we didn't check the news. The Senate confirmed General Berger as the next Commandant of the Marine Corps. So we've been watching that and just curious. I mean, that story was not widely reported. Wonder why, right? You know, three PFCs form a swastika and take a picture of it, put it on social media, and that's above the fold news. But the Senate not approving the Commandant of the Marine Corps, you know, and holding up that confirmation, hardly got written about. What's wrong with that picture? All right. We'll talk about the chef, too. We'll talk to the chef about his thoughts yesterday. His dad flew a C-47 in the attack on Normandy. And then came home and died a few years after that in a car accident. So we'll talk to Kim about that, but it is Friday, so Whitney Houston makes it official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to the leaders of the free world in the hope that you can summon the courage to understand that peace is important, that the only way that you sustain peace is to do your share, and part of your share is to field an army, a military that is capable of combining with its allies and preventing totalitarian governments around the world from attempting to impose their order, imposing their warped view of what the world should be on free nations. Here's to hoping that you figure that shit out.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City. Standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran, but, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Neller. All right. Check the weather around Marineland today. Mostly sunny in 78 in Quantico. Mostly cloudy in 85 at Camp Lejeune. Sunny in 79, 29 Palms. Clouds in 62 at Camp Pendleton. Dark, cloudy, and 75 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark, cloudy, and 80 on Okinawa, which is the home of the 3rd Marine Division, the storied 3rd Marine Division, and the Marines of 3MEF. Currently, it is sunny and 101 late in the day in the Al Anbar province of Iraq. It is dark, clear, and 93 in the Helmand province of Afghanistan at the home of All Marine Radio. It is cloudy in 62, looking for a high of 71 today. Had some rain showers overnight. Tomorrow, 74. And on Sunday, 77 degrees under sunny skies. What the hell? California just came back? Not really sure. Holy shit. All right. That is a look at your weather. When we come back, I don't know that we'll continue the conversation about confronting totalitarianism, but, you know, it is the lesson from World War II. Can you imagine that? 70 to 85 million people die in that as a result of that conflict. Because we were unwilling, along with the Brits and the French, to confront the Germans. Yeah. You know what weakness gets you? It gets you a bigger war. That's no shit either. All right, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Yeah, weakness sucks, man. Weakness sucks. Don't be weak.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
So Colleen and I are actually Listen to this shit. So I pick up Colleen yesterday from school. We come back to my house. She has a candy striper meeting at 4 o'clock. But she doesn't know if she has to stay just for the meeting or to do some of the credential work. So if she just stays for the meeting, she's done at 4:30. If she has to stay for the whole thing, she's done at 6. Okay, so we're gonna drive down there. I don't know, about 50 minutes to get there. Down to Hogue Hospital. So we go down there, and I said, okay, now when you go in there, text me, right? And tell me if it's going to be 4:30, because if it's 4:30, I'll just stay here. Well, I'm watching the Yankee game, so I got Jack and Joe in the car to amuse me, so I'm like, I'll be all right. But I'm not going to sit there for an hour and a half, for God's sake. So she says, okay. So I'm waiting. Finally, she says, I have to stay till 6. Okay. So I head home. I stop and get gas. I'm almost home. I get another text. Dad. Now, it pisses me off when she sends me a text that starts with just Dad. Dad. No other data. Send. So I never respond to those. If you have something to say, say it, okay? So anyway, she was confused when I asked her, and I'm going to be done at 4:30. Can you come back and get me? So I said, sure. So I turn around and I go back there. Now, something that's been in my head relative to Colleen and becoming a candy striper, right? Those of you, everybody knows what a candy striper is, right? Candy striper works at a hospital. My mom was a candy striper. She had like a white kind of a outfit, and they wore kind of this apron that had pink stripes on it, right? That's where the thing candy striper came from. And they wore like a little nurse's hat with the pink stripes on it, I think. So anyway, I got to thinking about, you know, Colleen like mentally prepared for what she's going to see down there. My conclusion was, no. And so I go down, I pick her up, we're driving back to my house. And so I said, can I ask you a question? She said, yeah. I said, are you prepared for what you're going to see down there? And, you know, I got the, just, I got the eye look, like, what do you mean? I said, you know what happens in hospitals, right? She's like, well, I said, you know, a lot of times people get their lives saved down there, but a lot of times they don't, you know? You understand that, right? And she looks at me and says, well, yeah. I said, and I'm not just talking about old people, you know, that it is their time, so they pass away. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, children. I'm talking about babies. I'm talking about all kinds of different things that you'll see in the hallways there, in the foyers there, right, in the emergency room there. So if you're around the hospital... And she said, Dad, but I'm just going to help transport people, you know, the first, I don't know, 6 months or whatever, however long her probationary period is. And then, like, and she said, and I said, and then what? She said, well, then I could transfer to do other things. I said, like what? Like surgery? She said, no. I said, oncology? She said, well, yeah, you can work in oncology. I said, okay. So I said, I just want to make sure that you understand that you're going to see some rough shit down there. And it's part of what life is about. Okay? And she looks at me. Okay. I said, okay, so just remember, you know, you've heard me tell you this before, but life's not for pussies, man. You know, you're going to see some stuff down there that's going to rock your little world. I said, so just be prepared for it, okay? And if you need somebody to talk to, you can talk to me. Okay. Thank you. So, anyway, interesting conversation with my daughter. Yeah, casualties in World War II. So the way this table went was from country, total population, military deaths from all causes, right? Civilian deaths due to military activity and crimes against humanity. Civilian deaths due to war-related famine and disease. Very few countries have statistics on that. And then total deaths. Nation with the most civilian deaths are China. 8 million people died. 8 million civilians died. Germany. 3 million civilians die. Japan. Approximately 1 million civilians die. Yeah, Japan's military essentially gets wiped out. Korea, not as huge population, they had 500,000 people die. The Netherlands, again, not a huge population. They had 200,000 civilians get killed in World War II. Again, the Philippines, not a huge population, almost 200,000 civilians killed in World War II. Poland, almost 6 million people killed, civilians killed in World War II. Soviet Union, somewhere between 5 and 10 million people are estimated to have been killed in World War II. Yugoslavia, again, not a huge population. Somewhere between 1 million and 1.4 million civilians are killed. In the United States, 12,000 civilians are killed. I'd be curious to that footnote, huh? The price of weakness is too great to bear. So be strong. Be strong and have strong alliances. That's the moral of the story from yesterday. But I don't know that people, you know, in order to be strong, you have to be willing to forego, right, the bright shining object that's being dangled in front of you by a country like China. Well, you know that part of the reason that they're dangling this in front of us is to manipulate our foreign policy. We know that, yes? And you know that we'll have to rein that in. And if we rein that in, it's going to cause economic hardship. All right, let me get to some news because I haven't done any news in a couple of days. So, Marine Raider is sentenced to 4 years in prison in Green Beret's death. Says he betrayed a friend. An elite Marine Raider was sentenced on Friday, that would be today, to spend 4 years in a military prison after admitting to his role in the strangulation death of a Green Beret, a fellow special operator he described as a friend. How about that? Again, you know what's echoing in my head is General Furness talking about discipline and taking a ton of shit for it at Camp Lejeune. And then you read something like this, and now I'd be curious to know if you ask that raider, do you felt that he had enough people around him emphasizing discipline and his role in that world, what would you say? Probably say no. Staff Sergeant Kevin Maxwell pled guilty to negligent homicide, burglary, obstruction, and other charges as part of a plea deal with prosecutors to avoid more serious charges, including murder. Maxwell on Thursday took the witness stand, delivered some 2 hours of testimony that at times was emotional. He described Melger's killing as the accidental result of a devious hazing plan that he initially thought was merely a joke launched over late night drinks at a local bar. Maxwell told the judge overseeing his case, Marine Colonel Glenn Hines, he would never forgive himself for participating in the ridiculous and harmful and abusive trick. Against a buddy he had spent the prior day with, enjoying an extracurricular boat trip on the nearby Niger River. From the witness stand, Maxwell turned to Melger's widow, Michelle Melger, in the first row of the courtroom gallery, telling her that her husband was a better man than him, and he would never have participated in the kind of act that led to his death. Quote, Logan would have stopped them from doing that to me. I know that for a fact, Maxwell said, his voice cracking as Michelle Melger nodded her head in agreement. I was weak. 100% he would have taken care of me. For me, that moment defines what I am as a man. When I look at myself in the mirror, I am a terrible man. I'm a terrible friend. I betrayed a friend of mine, a fellow American. I betrayed his future. Maxwell, 29, is one of four American special operators charged in Melger's death and the second to plead guilty to reduced charges in the attack. Navy SEAL Chief Petty Officer Adam Matthews, a former member of SEAL Team 6, was sentenced to 1 year in prison last month for his role in the killing. Two others, Navy SEAL Chief Petty Officer Tony DeDolph and Marine Raider Gunnery Sergeant Mario Madera Rodriguez, face a slew of charges, including murder, for their roles in the Green Berets killing. As part of their arrangements with prosecutors, Matthews and Maxwell agreed to testify against DeDolph and Madera Rodriguez. From his seat, the judge asked the following. How can something like this happen in 2017? The question needs to be answered. If we don't get to the bottom of it, it's going to happen again. From the witness stand, Maxwell identified DeDolph as the primary instigator of the hazing plan, testifying the SEAL had often displayed a sense of dark humor. Through most of the night, Maxwell said he believed plans to remediate Melger for perceived slights raised by another Marine would have been drinking heavily and who had been drinking heavily and was visibly angry. And DeDolph was simply a drunken running farce. Maxwell described a brewing tense, if not toxic, climate among the small community of military special operators serving in Mali, especially between SEAL Team 6 members and soldiers of the Army's 3rd Special Forces Group, Melger's unit, who shared a house in Bamako and whose mission were separate but sometimes overlapped. The Marine said DeDolph, a member of SEAL Team 6 and another SEAL at times, bullied Melger and often did not get along with Melger's supervisors, who were the only soldiers living in the quarters. Nonetheless, he testified none of the four charged in the soldier's death intended to kill him that night. DeDolph, quote, comes up with this just ridiculous, over-the-top idea, Maxwell says. We laughed at it. It seemed like everyone was egging it on by laughing about it. That was until DeDolph began handing out assignments for the act. Maxwell, for example, was to turn on the lights in Melger's room, lift the mosquito netting, and help bind the Special Forces soldier. When DeDolph accompanied Maxwell and Madera Rodriguez to their separate quarters to retrieve supplies, including duct tape and a sledgehammer, Maxwell told Hines that he was conflicted about carrying out the plan, but he was eager to fit in with his peers who seemed committed to the act. Quote, it seemed to me at first like it was a joke, but as the night progressed, the reality of what we were going to do stepped in. Everyone thought it was funny. No one stepped in. No one was saying, stop. No, this isn't right, he added. Maxwell's testimony matched the testimony of Matthews, which was delivered on May 16th in the same courtroom in Norfolk. The plan was to bust through Melgar's bedroom door with a sledgehammer, secure his arms and legs with duct tape, while Dadolf, a former professional mixed martial arts fighter, placed him in a temporary unconscious state via a chokehold. A British expatriate who tagged along with the Americans, along with two Malayan security guards, was to film the incident with his phone, they said. Maxwell confirmed Thursday from the witness stand the prosecutor's accusation that the event was to culminate in a sexual molestation, the details of which were not revealed in Matthew's court-martial. Maxwell insisted his actions on June 4th, 2017, erased any positives that he had done as a Marine, telling Hines he did not deserve to wear the Marine Corps Special Forces Operations Command badge on the left chest of the uniform that identifies Marine Raiders. "I am an imposter wearing that right now," he said. "I'm wearing something I don't represent." And we don't want to have the discussion about, we don't want to have the discussion about discipline. And there isn't one other general officer in the Marine Corps other than Dale Alford that's spoken publicly about the subject. If you haven't seen the video, a U.S. and warship come within 100 feet of each other. The USS Chancellorsville. And this is an old, we've seen this in the Black Sea. When we go up there, the Russians doing crazy shit with their ships. Right? All designed to do what? For this video to get out and for the world to know how great the Russian military is. Right? The truth is, the Russians are a fraud and we need not be afraid to confront them. The Navy released a video of the near collision today. The Chancellorsville was recovering one of its helicopters on a steady course and speed when the Russian ship came from behind and to the right of the vessel. That would be aft and starboard of the vessel, for those of you non-shellback types. Accelerated and close to an unsafe distance, the unsafe action forced the Chancellorsville to execute all engines back full and to maneuver to avoid the collision. Reuters reported Friday that the Russian media blamed the U.S. for the near collision, saying that the Chancellorsville had done the dangerous maneuvering. Yeah, but the Russians, right? If their lips are moving, they are lying. Exactly. Army Chief of Staff Mark Milley swore in 21 reenlisting soldiers Friday from the 101st Airborne Division, joined by a 97-year-old former paratrooper who helped liberate this French city 75 years ago. So the 101st Airborne, back where they wrote their initial chapters in American military history, reenlisting. So it must be a really cool experience to go do that. Observe and report. Troops are the eyes and ears of the Border Patrol. About 1,200 soldiers and Marines are part of a mobile surveillance camera mission that uses Border Patrol vehicles decked out with cameras and infrared technologies at 150 sites in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. They show the truck. It's pretty crazy looking truck. Interesting. The Marine Corps Times. We'll check some stories there, and then we'll do the top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll get the chef on today. Amid air fire, forces CH-53 to land. Those are mid-air fires. Those are not good things, just so you know. Yeah, the Russians, man. A Marine Corps CH-53 Echo based out of Miramar Air Station in California was forced to make an emergency landing due to an in-flight fire, according to Marines. The heavy lift Super Stallion landed safely at Imperial County Airport in Imperial, California, a little less than 100 miles due east, with no reported injuries, the command release detailed. Imperial County Fire Department extinguished the flames after the aircraft landed, the release said. There's no picture. There's a picture of a 53, some generic picture, so that in the news. There's a story about troops on the border painting concertina so it doesn't look so bad. All right, whatever. Big story. Again, you didn't see it covered when it didn't happen. But it is being covered now that General Berger confirmed by the Senate after his nomination was put on hold. But there's no mention of it getting put on hold and what caused the nomination to that hold to be rescinded. Yeah, so that story is not covered, but this one is. Right? Five Marines at Naval Air Station Pensacola charged with breaking into a school after a wedding. Story about D-Day at 75, Nation honors veterans, memory of the fallen. And then, you know, the whole situation, again, talking about totalitarian regimes and our ability to confront them and the requirement to confront them. U.S. CENTCOM commander says Mideast buildup prompted Iran to step back. Now, for those of you that remember, right, CENTCOM's got a new commander, right? He is Marine Corps General Kenneth McKenzie Jr. Now, he's the one that said, relative to the South China Sea, that, you know, lest you forget, we have a lot of experience taking islands in the Pacific. He said that a few months ago. Okay. So anyway, this is from Baghdad. Iran has chosen to step back and recalculate after making preparations for an apparent attack against U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf. But it's too early to conclude that the threat is gone, the top commander of American forces in the Middle East said on Thursday. This is written by Robert Burns for the Associated Press. Burns, pretty experienced dude. When you see his byline, you can normally take it to the bank. In an interview with three reporters accompanying him to the Gulf, General Frank McKenzie said he remains concerned about Iran's potential for aggression. He would not rule out requesting additional U.S. forces to bolster defenses against Iranian missiles or other weapons. I don't actually believe the threat has diminished, McKenzie said. I believe the threat is very real. McKenzie, the head of the U.S. Central Command, and other military officials are trying to strike a balance between persuading Iran that the U.S. is prepared to retaliate for an Iranian attack on Americans, thus deterring conflict and pushing so much military muscle into the Gulf that Iran thinks the U.S. plans of attack, rethinks its plans on a U.S. attack, in which case it might feel compelled to strike preemptively, thus spark a war. Again, like, why would we be afraid of a war with Iran? Mac, we're tired of war, we're tired of war. Hey, look at this, do the math, man. 80 million people. Right? And what sucks, honestly, What sucks is that the rest of the world seems to either have never learned that lesson, or it certainly doesn't heed that lesson. New story about the Marine Corps wants a special helmet for grunts. This story has been circulating. It's essentially a special operations helmet. And, you know, why would they have it and we not? Now, everybody doesn't need it, right? But if you're going to locate close with, you probably need it, right? Which won't make anybody happy. Oh, what? We're not Marines. But no, yeah, you're Marines. You're just not infantry. You're not locate close with people. Okay. So you get that helmet. Okay, when you become a locate close with person, you get that helmet. The military is being pulled deeper into the climate change debate. So, you got that going for you. Number two, Pentagon chief to suspend Turkey's F-35 pilot training. Got to be consequences, boys and girls. Turkish F-35 pilots training in the United States must leave the country by July 31st. How pissed are they? We got to go where? We got to go back home? God almighty. And training for new students will be halted. As in Ankara, Turkey, refuses to ditch a Russian missile system. Yeah, so be it. Number three, some troops to spend the next month painting border fence with Mexico. Not interested. Number four, beard and turban approved for Sikh airmen. For the first time, the Air Force has granted a Sikh airman permission to wear a turban, beard, and long hair following practices of his faith. Unbelievable. When you join the American military, it doesn't join you. You join it. Okay? So, if you want to practice your personal religious customs, then go ahead and practice them. Okay? Go ahead and practice them. But this is the American military. This is the way we do it. Number five, D-Day at 75, Nations Honor Veterans. And Veterans Memory of Fallen. So, all right. That's the news here on a Friday. Yeah, the whole idea of discipline. You see it crop up over and over and over. Here's another trending story out of Stars and Stripes. Navy captain's lust for teenager rightly brought him 8 years in prison, according to a court. What? I mean, come on, man. How stupid of this is this? Navy captain who bought wine, a piggy bank, and condoms, who brought wine, a piggy bank, and condoms to a purported sleepover with an adolescent he met at a Naples based library, was properly found guilty of attempting to sexually abuse and assault a child, the Navy's appellate court ruled. The court affirmed the May 29th verdict, an 8-year prison sentence handed to Captain Alan Dorbecker at a court-martial in Norfolk, Virginia 2 years ago. Dorbecker, a married submarine commander in his 40s, had argued in his appeal that his actions could have constituted only the lesser crime of attempted enticement of a minor to engage in sexual activity. Unbelievable. All right. honestly. But again, we'll join you. You don't have to join us. You can have it your way. Right? Don't expect that you're going to have to, you know, do anything you don't want to do. It's just the biggest bunch of garbage in the world. Anyway. All right. We'll talk to the head chef. That'll make us all feel better here on a Friday. We'll talk food. That coming up next on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.